Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
Pianist Seymour Lipkin, piano virtuoso and distinguished teacher. Welcome to Crossover. You were here several years ago, Mr. Lipkin, with a collection, a complete works, was it, of Beethoven?
Well, no, complete sonatas, not the complete works.
Okay. Well, of course, piano sonatas.
Yeah.
And you're here today to discuss a very exciting release. It's the complete piano sonatas and other major works for piano by Franz Schubert.
That's right.
Now, can you answer a question for me?
Sure.
Is this a Schubert year or something? Because there have been so many, there's so much attention paid. People seem to have been discovering Schubert or rediscovering Schubert.
Gosh, I don't think it's particularly a Schubert year. I mean, he was born in 97.
Yes.
And,
so it wouldn't
and,
be.
And, no, no. And then he died in 1828. So it's hardly a Schubert year.
But we were trying to figure that out because we at the station here are hearing so much of new releases of Schubert's works.
It's really interesting. In a certain way, I think his greatness escaped notice in a funny way. I mean, people are a little bit surprised that these sonatas are so great, are so extraordinary. I mean, they were really a little bit downgraded.
Yes, I mean, he was kind of eclipsed a little bit, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, anybody in the shadow of Beethoven. It's very interesting that the edition I have of these sonatas say, nowadays people understand that Schubert is great, is a great composer. And, of course, the more you study them, the more you realize how very, very extraordinary they are.
Well, you've been quoted as saying that the melodic line is the really
important.
Oh,
it's not just the melodic lines. That was the old theory that Schubert, just wrote beautiful melodies. The intellectual power is really very extraordinary. The power of construction, to use a technical word, is really remarkable how every moment is thought through with the greatest power and the greatest originality. I mean, here he was, I always have this, this fantasy of, standing on a street corner in Vienna, and on one side Beethoven was grumping along, and on the other side there was this little boy, who was Schubert, who was watching him with awestruck. And to be in that shadow and to operate with this enormous originality that really was totally different. It was really even more remarkable.
Well, of course, as an artist and taking the works apart and preparing them and studying them for performance, you probably have discovered also for yourself another side of Schubert.
Well, I wasn't unaware that it was there, but the more you work on them, the more you see how carefully and how with the greatest intellectual power these things are made. Based on an enormous gift of melodic gift, but this gift is used and the pieces are constructed in such a way that they have a great overall power. It's not just a melody.
Yes, but of course, again, people get tags put on to them.
And then there's a very amusing. At one time I was curious to know if Beethoven knew about Schubert, who was living across the street or down the block or something.
Yes,
and there apparently is no record. There is Beethoven had these conversation books because he couldn't hear.
Yes.
And people would write down things to and then hand it to him, and he would answer.
Uh-huh.
And there is one conversation book in which somebody says to him, "Do you know about this Schubert? He certainly had a wonderful melodic gift, but there's no sign of what Beethoven said." Nobody knows whether he really knew him or not. And there's also a question. Schubert's brother, 20 years after he died, wrote a biography.
Oh.
And in the biography, he says Schubert adored Beethoven, whom he visited very often. And Schindler, who knew Beethoven very well, wrote on his copy of it, "That is not true." And nobody knows. That's the only record there is. And nobody knows whether it's true or not, whether he actually called on him or what.
So what was the difference in years in terms of actual years?
Well, let's see. Beethoven was born 1770, and Schubert was born, 97?
So
there was a whole generation.
Yeah, so he was, and also died very young, Schubert.
He died at 28, died at 31.
Absolutely. So, again, you have these great collections that you're doing. You did the Beethoven piano works, and now, of course, these are really, what are they, the extant piano sonatas and whatever, great, or
the completed
major
works.
Yeah.
They're all the completed ones. He wrote, there are several which he abandoned in the middle.
Really?
Which are not completed.
Mm-hmm.
And other people with a lot of nerve have finished them, but I don't think that was a good idea.
They did it with Mozart too a little bit, so I guess. So in other words, so you have here, you have impromptus, you have the the Moment Musical, which I know the first one,
which is very
famous.
Yes.
And then, of course, you have, also the sonatas. So there are three volumes here.
Yes.
You also completed, is this something you did before you completed
Complete
Works for Violin
years
and Piano?
Earlier.
Mm-hmm. With Arnold Steinhardt.
With Steinhardt, yes.
So how do you arrive at a project? Because you are a teacher, you are at Curtis and at the Juilliard still, and, here you come out with an enormous accomplishment of recording. I understand that you told me you edit the recordings yourself. It's so time consuming.
It's enormously. Yeah.
So you make a decision to do this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What leads up to that decision?
Oh, I don't know. I just thought it was a nice idea. But I was asked to perform them. I mean, I suggested it, but I was asked to perform them at the Gardner Museum in Boston.
Okay.
And I had done the Beethoven there, and I said, okay, yeah, we did the Beethoven, let's do the Schubert. And they said, okay, fine. And then after having played them, I thought, well, here they are, let's record them.
After putting all that work in. So the $64 question is, how do you find the time to do all of this?
Oh, I don't know. Somehow or another.
Now, you are a conductor as well. I mean, you have done that.
I haven't been
lifetime.
Conducting in recent years. I find that for me, the concentration involved in one or the other is really all consuming.
But is it a different approach?
Yes.
Do you have to screw your head on in a different
direction? Extremely different.
What, for instance, now, especially as pianist, I mean, I can see more orchestral instruments, you know, if a conductor is acquainted with that. But a piano is definitely a solo instrument in terms of you are still a soloist when you do a concerto. Of course, there are some works that incorporate piano as an orchestral instrument. But generally speaking, I would say that you are a soloist. And so this is a whole different approach, isn't it?
Oh, it's completely different. And that's why it's very difficult to try and do both at once. In conducting, the technical necessities are much less and much much different.
Well, physically.
I mean, physically.
Yes.
I mean, there are certain techniques that are important, but it becomes a question of dealing with the multiplicity of instruments and trying to get them all in your head at the same time, and of trying to and then at the moment of rehearsal, you're dealing with the psychology of 65 or 75 or 80 people. And that's a whole different thing. You know, if you sit down at the piano, it's only you that you have to deal with.
Well, again, I mean, of course.
And I have found that the absorption and the amount of concentration necessary for either of these things is all-inclusive. I found that when I was trying to do both, I had difficulty in concentrating on one or the other.
Was it, yes, of course, because you have to throw yourself in completely, was it a different mindset, and did it affect your playing the piano? Did you learn anything as a conductor, or did you learn anything as a soloist that would apply to the other role?
I don't think. I mean, you know, you learn things as a musician that, of course, apply from one to the other. But I wouldn't say that, no. It's just that, you know, I remember the last time that I conducted something from the piano, I thought to myself, you know, I don't like this because one or the other is not getting your full attention.
Yes, well, I would think so. I mean, I would think so. So,
and either you sort of play with a wing and a prayer, or you let the orchestra play by itself. And I've pretty much abandoned that.
Well, you have certainly filled your time, and now you also are. You still teaching?
Oh yes, indeed. Yes, I'm teaching at Curtis. And at Juilliard as well. And also, I'm the director of a chamber music festival in the summer.
I was going to ask you, is that the Kneisel Hall?
Yes.
Where is that located?
That's in Maine, in Blue Hill, Maine.
Oh, I see. And what your musical artistic director,
I guess.
So that means you choose the programming.
I choose the programs. I choose the artists who are faculty people.
Do you ever perform on those series?
Oh, I perform all the time. Sure.
So you're extremely, extremely active.
Oh, boy.
Last
summer I played 14 chamber works, and in the middle went off and played a Mozart concerto.
Well, that's why, again, I ask, where do you find the time?
Well, I don't know.
But you love it, and of course you are so accomplished. You have a marvelous reputation. And that's why when I got these, I said, oh, my goodness, Seymour Lipkin again. and you have tremendous vitality and strength. Well, do you have an opinion about the new crop of pianists, and where do they go? I mean, where is there, with the music industry the way it is, what is the future for?
It's a big problem, of course. There are so many really gifted kids. Very difficult to find spots for them.
As a teacher, what do you offer them as advice in terms of the future? Where to go? How to start? I think the community concert series have been
banished already. I don't think they even exist anymore.
And you have to be, I guess, a hotshot virtuoso to make, you know, your flash in the pan. But then what happens? Is it teaching?
It's interesting. Hotshot virtuosos, yes. But there are several guys,
or girls.
Women as well, I was just going to say, that have made a very good reputation and career by quietly playing very beautifully.
Oh, isn't that nice?
And it's very nice to hear that. People who are modest but very, very good and expressive, and somehow or another it has worked.
Would that be mostly in chamber music, would you
no,
say?
No.
Solo work.
I think some people appear regularly with orchestra and in recitals and things, and who are not hotshot virtuosos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tortoise and the hare, I guess. Right? You just,
well, in a sense, though.
Yeah. I mean,
but they have very, very strong internal values.
Mm.
And stick with them, and are seem to have gotten recognized.
Well, now, you yourself have also done something new. I mean, you're up on the very, very cutting edge of recording, since the recording industry is taking a nosedive. You have, I think, is it the first MP3 that you made?
That's right. They put it on an MP3, but even that is no longer the cutting edge. Now,
you are on iTunes.
I'm on iTunes.
And you were featured. How about that? Now, explain that. Explain that to the audience.
Well, that was an invention of my recording company, you know.
Which is Newport, is that right?
Newport Classic. And one day he said, you know, you're on iTunes. I said, oh. And not only that, but what amused me very much was at one point I was one of the, they put out a list of the top 100 sellers on iTunes, and there I was.
Isn't that wonderful? What particular albums were
It was
were
the Beethoven. The Beethoven set, yes.
So I'm sure this is going to make a splash as well. Schubert. This Schubert, I also personally have found that just listening to Schubert again and again You need time, but
you need time.
You need
yes.
time, and that's the one thing we really don't have.
You need time, and Schubert was somebody who also needed time.
Mm.
I mean, his music unfolds over large periods of time. He just was not kind of personality like Beethoven's.
Wasn't flamboyant.
Which was intensely concentrated. Mm. Schubert needs time. And
to breathe.
Yeah.
Well, you certainly have given us a project to breathe with. And hopefully, there's no question about it. I'm sure it's going to be very popular on iTunes.
Well,
I think you should be terribly proud of that because you're
very pleased. Yeah. I think it's wonderful.
You're
yes.
in the new technology.
Yes.
You're right on top and you're very accessible. So doing what you believe in.
They told me when it came out in the top 100 that it was even ahead of several rock groups, I love that. I thought that was very funny.
I think Schubert would like that, too.
Yeah, I think Schubert would have liked it very much.
Well, Seymour Lipkin.
But so much of his music it took so long for it to be really recognized. I mean,
What do you think the reason is?
Well, he wasn't a pushy personality. He was only 31, you know. I mean, years after he died, I think it was Sir George Grove went to visit his brother, and the brother said, oh, he said, I got a symphony here, and he opened the drawer, and there was an unfinished symphony, you know, sitting in a drawer. Nobody ever heard of it. And Schubert never heard his big C major symphony either. So he wasn't, you know, it took a while.
It certainly did.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately, you are here and you have given this great gift to the music world, and we appreciate so much your spending time with us today.
Indeed.
And look forward to, I think you mentioned there's a possible idea still brewing for another collection.
Well, yeah, I'm a little hesitant to talk about it because it seems probable that I will do all the Mozart concertos, but that's not stamped in iron as yet.
Okay, well,
but there is a definite project to do it, and if we can manage that, that's quite a job.
Well, that would be amazing, and if anyone can do it, you can. So, thanks so much for coming today,
Seymour Lipkin. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
A pleasure having you here on Crossover, and the very best.
Okay. Thank you.